So this is the last day of our class. Okay, yesterday we finished up to the attainment of Magga or Path. So after the attainment of Magga or Path, there followed two or three moments of fruition, moments, and then the thought process subsides into Bhavanga. And then what follows are called the reviewing thought processes. So everybody who has reached the enlightenment reviews the path, the fruit, that means fruition consciousness and Nibbana, invariably. And regarding the defilements destroyed and defilements remaining, he may or may not review. Now I want you to understand the moment of enlightenment with reference to the chart that was distributed long ago during the time we studied the fourth chapter. But fortunately, there is a transparency, and so I want you to look at the transparency on the screen. So this is the thought process. It is called path thought process. Actually, it contains path and also fruition. So when a person is about to gain enlightenment, this thought process occurs in his mind. So first we have a Bhavanga, and then vibrating Bhavanga, and a rest Bhavanga as usual. But there is no past Bhavanga because it is mind or thought process and not five sense or thought process. And then Manodvara Vajana or mind door adverting. So at that moment, the active moments of consciousness begin. So first the mind turns to the object, so there is Manodvara Vajana or mind door adverting. And then follow preparation, access, and conforming. In Pali, they are called Parikama, Upachara, and Anuloma. So these three moments of consciousness arise. And after the conformity or Anuloma comes Gotrabhu Ji, Gotrabhu, that is change of lineage. So change of lineage happens at that moment. And following that, Magga or path consciousness follows, and then here two fruition moments follow. And after the second fruition moment, the flow of consciousness subsides into Bhavanga again. So this is the enlightenment thought process, we can call it. Now in this thought process, first, look at the objects. The first three takes the kama or kama nimitta or gati nimitta as object as usual. So Bhavanga chitas or Bhavanga consciousness always takes one of these three, kama or sign of kama or sign of destination. And then mind or adverting and others arise, and they take what are called miscellaneous formations. That means the object of vipassana meditation. So when you practice vipassana meditation, you take the mind as object or matter as object. And mind and matter are called here miscellaneous formations, different kinds of formations. Since mind and matter are conditioned by some other causes, they are called formations. So they take miscellaneous formations as object. So three moments following the mind or adverting, take the miscellaneous formations as object. Actually, they are the vipassana consciousness. Since they are vipassana consciousness, they take miscellaneous formations as object. And then gotrabhu, or change of lineage, arises. But it takes nibbana as object. Now, upachara, anuloma, and gotrabhu are actually wholesome sense sphere consciousnesses. Kama vajra, kusala chaitas. So, the four moments of kama vajra, kusala chaitas arise before the arising of magga or the path. Among these four, the first three take miscellaneous formations as object, and G, gotrabhu, takes nibbana as object. And after it, magga or path arises. And magga takes nibbana as object, and the following fruition movements also take nibbana as object. So in this thought process, there is the difference of objects for different thought moments. In other types of thought processes, the object of all the types of consciousness in one given thought process must be the same. But here, the objects are different. Some take miscellaneous formations as object, and the others nibbana as object. Now, gotrabhu is called change of lineage. That means at that moment, a person is changed into a noble person. Actually, he will change as a noble person when he reaches the magga moment. So it is a preparation for change, actually. So from this moment on, that means beginning with magga moment, he is called an ariya, or a noble person. So he changes from an ordinary or puttujana to an ariya, or a noble person. And so it is called change of lineage. Actually, you have met change of lineage regarding the jhana thought processes also. But their change is from kama vajra to rupa vajra. But here change is from puttujana to ariya, or worldling to noble persons. Although gotrabhu takes nibbana as object, it cannot do the function of eradicating mental defilements. It just takes nibbana as object, it just sees nibbana, but it cannot eradicate mental defilements. Eradication of mental defilement occurs only at the moment of path or pala. At the moment of path, destruction of defilements or eradication of defilements is achieved. Now you will remember that consciousness is always accompanied by mental factors. So along with path consciousness, magga there, 36 mental factors arise. And among the 36, there are 8 that are called 8 factors of path. Among the 8 factors of path, there is panya, or right understanding. Actually, it is that panya that accomplishes the destruction of defilements. So destruction of defilements, or eradication of defilements, takes place at the moment of path or magga. And following magga, there are two, in this process, there are two moments of fruition or pala consciousness. And the function of these two is further tranquilization of defilements. defilements are destroyed at the moment of path or magga. But at the moments of fruition, they are further tranquilized. That means, suppose a person puts out a fire. That putting out the fire is like path moment, destruction of mental defilements. And then, after that, he would pour water on the fire already extinguished so that it cannot burn again. So in the same way, so that defilements cannot come up again, the phala moments further tranquilize the defilements. So the actual eradication of mental defilements occurs at the moment of path, and during the phala moments they are further tranquilized, they are further subdued. So this is the path thought process or enlightenment thought process. So according to the fixed law of consciousness, the moments of consciousness shown here must follow one after another. There can be no skipping of any one of them. And so, without the three moments, parikama, upachara, and anuloma, there can be no gotrabhu, ji, and when there is no gotrabhu, there can be no path, magga, and when there is no magga, there can be no phalas. So that means enlightenment can occur only through the practice of vipassana meditation, because parikama, upachara, and anuloma, these three are the vipassana consciousnesses. Strictly speaking, gotrabhu is not vipassana, because vipassana must take miscellaneous formations as object. But it does not take miscellaneous formations, but nibbana as object. So it is not vipassana. But since it comes after the flow of vipassana, it is included in vipassana. But strictly, it is not vipassana. So only the parikama, upachara, and anuloma are vipassana. So this is how we must understand the enlightenment. We often talk about enlightenment, but sometimes we may not know what enlightenment is. So it is important that when we talk about enlightenment, we define it so that the other person understands what we mean. Enlightenment may mean different things to different people, people of different religions. So if you ask a Christian, you will get one answer, and if you ask a Hindu, you may get another answer. So it is important that when we talk about enlightenment, we must define it. And enlightenment consists in the arising of path consciousness and mental factors along with it, and eradication of mental defilements and taking nibbana as object. So these four things constitute what we call enlightenment. So at the moment of enlightenment, path consciousness arises, and along with path consciousness, cetasikas, mental factors arise. So among the mental factors, there are eight factors of path, and then there must be the eradication of mental defilements, and the path consciousness must take nibbana as object. So only when it can take nibbana can magga consciousness or path consciousness arise. So nibbana serves as an object condition for the path consciousness. So a yogi must go through different stages of vipassana one by one. He must begin with defining mind and matter, and then discerning the conditions, and then seeing the three characteristics, and then discernment of rise and fall, and so on. Actually, these stages are logical sequence in the practice. Now you see the three characteristics, and then you become disenchanted with them, and then you want to throw them away, or you want to get rid of them, and then you make another effort, and then as a result, you reach enlightenment. This is explained in Visuddhimagga with a very powerful simile. It is a simile of a person catching a fish. You may have heard of this simile. So I will read it to you. Okay. Here is a simile. A man thought to catch a fish. So he took a fishing net and cast it in the water. And net here means not the net fishermen use. It is a basket-like net. So he put it in the water. He put it, and then when he thought that he had caught a fish, he put his hand into the mouth of the basket under the water and seized a snake by the neck. He was glad, thinking, "I have caught a fish." In the belief that he had caught a big fish, he lifted up to see. When he saw the three marks, like poison marks on the neck of the snake, the three lines, he perceived that it was a snake and he was terrified. He saw danger, felt dispassion or revulsion for what he had seized, and desired to be delivered from it. Contriving a means to deliverance, he unwrapped the coils from his hand, starting from the tip of its tail. Then he raised his arm, and when he had weakened the snake by swinging it two or three times around his head, he flung it away, crying, "Go, foul snake!" Then quickly scrambling up onto dry land, he stood looking back whence he had come, thinking, "Goodness, I have been delivered from the jaws of a huge snake." So this is a simile given in Visuddhimagga. Now the time when the meditator was glad at the outset to have acquired a person is like the time when the man was glad to have seized the snake by the neck. That means, now we are born as human beings and we have this body. And we are pleased with this body, we are attached to this body, we are happy that we have this body. So it is like the man who thought that he has caught a fish. The meditator, seeing the three characteristics and the formations after effecting resolution of the compact into elements, is like the man seeing the three marks on pulling the snake's head out of the mouth of the net. So a meditator, during the stage of comprehending the mind and matter, he sees the three characteristics. So that is like the man seeing the three marks of the snake. So when he sees the three marks, he knows the snake is poisonous and it could bite him and it could kill him. So it is like the yogi seeing the three characteristics. The meditator's knowledge of appearance of terror is like the time when he was frightened. So after seeing the three marks, he became frightened. He knew that it was a poisonous snake, and now he was afraid. So it is like the meditator's knowledge of appearance as terror. That means seeing formations as fearful. Knowledge of contemplation of danger is like the man's thereupon seeing the danger. So after seeing the snake as poisonous, he sees danger in the snake. In the same way, after seeing the three characteristics, he sees danger, or he sees faultiness in mind and matter, or his body. Knowledge of contemplation of dispassion is like the man's dispassion or revulsion for what he has seized. Now he doesn't want it. He wants to turn away from it. The man's dispassion for the conditioned phenomena or for mind and matter. That means he loses interest now. He no longer wants to keep it in his hand, since he knows that it is a snake and there is danger. So in the same way, when a yogi sees the three characteristics and understands that the mind and matter are fearful and faulty, he loses interest in being attached to the mind and matter. Knowledge of desire for deliverance is like the man's deliverance from the snake. So now he wants to get rid of mind and matter because they are faulty, they are dangerous, and they are like a poisonous snake. The attribution of the three characteristics to formations by knowledge, contemplation, or reflection is like the man's contriving a means deliverance. That means, after he has the desire to get rid of or to give up the mind and matter, he further contemplates on the three characteristics. That is like the man taking the snake and swinging the snake over his head to make it weaker. Just as the man weakened a snake by swinging it, keeping it away and rendering it incapable of biting, and was thus quite delivered, so too this meditator weakens formations by swinging them with the attribution of the three characteristics. That means he again tries to see the mind and matter as impermanent, suffering and non-soul, so that he does not go to taking them as permanent and so on again. So this is the simile given in Visuddhimagga. So you can find this simile on page 761 of this book, or by chapter, it is chapter 21, paragraph 49 and 50. And you should also read the paragraph 93 as a continuation of this explanation of the simile. So, like this fisherman, we are first pleased with our bodies, we are first pleased with what we encounter, what we have, what we experience. But from the moment we see the three characteristics, we are not so happy, because we now know that it is disintegrating or dissolving every moment, and so there is danger, it is fearful and it is dangerous or faulty and so on. So we want to get rid of it, and so we put forth effort again to thoroughly understand mind and matter as impermanent and so on. And then later, when our meditation becomes mature, then we will get into the stage of enlightenment. And now the manual tells us about the three doors to emancipation and the emancipation itself. Now, these are not so important for the practice. Whether we know through which door emancipation comes, what is important is for the emancipation to come. So, if you're curious about which door emancipation comes, then you need to understand this. So, the contemplation of non-self, which discards the clinging to a self, becomes a door to emancipation, termed contemplation of the void. Emancipation simply means magga, or enlightenment moment. The contemplation of impermanence, which discards the sign of perversion, becomes the door to emancipation, termed contemplation of the signless. The contemplation of suffering, which discards desire through craving, becomes the door to emancipation, termed contemplation of desireless. So there are three contemplation: contemplation of non-self, anatta; contemplation of impermanence, anicca; and contemplation of suffering, dukkha. So when insight reaches its culmination, it settles upon one of the three contemplations. The yogi actually made all three contemplations because he sees the impermanence of the conditioned phenomena, he sees the suffering nature, and he sees the non-self nature of the conditioned phenomena. But when insight reaches its culmination, then it settles upon just one of the three contemplations. And while making that three contemplation, emancipation may arise, or enlightenment may arise. So when enlightenment arises, the enlightenment is called emancipation, and contemplation is called the door to emancipation, because through the contemplation of non-self, one reaches enlightenment. And when a person, or when his vipassana settles upon the contemplation of impermanence, then his emancipation is said to come through the door of contemplation of the signless. Contemplation of the signless means contemplation of the signs of perversion as permanence, stability, and durability, which lingers over formations owing to the perversion of perception, and the contemplation of suffering, which discards desire through craving, becomes a door to emancipation, termed contemplation of desireless. So the contemplation of suffering is contemplation of desireless, and the emancipation can come through this door also. So there are three emancipations and three doors to emancipation. So if with the insight leading to emergence, one contemplates on non-self, then the path is known as the void emancipation. So we can call the path void emancipation if the insight leading to emergence contemplates on non-self. So contemplation on non-self, and when emancipation arises, it is called the void emancipation, or in Pali, sunyata, sunyata emancipation. If a person contemplates on impermanence, anicca, then the path is known as the signless emancipation. And if one contemplates on suffering, then the path is known as the desireless emancipation. So according to the contemplation, the emancipation gets its name. Void emancipation, signless emancipation, and desireless emancipation. Thus the path receives three names according to the way of insight. Likewise the fruit in the cognitive process of the path receives these three names according to the way of the path. If the path gets the name void emancipation, then the fruition moments following it also get the name void emancipation, and so on. So the fruition moments get the name according to the path which precedes them. That is, in this cognitive process, or in the process like this. But in the attainment of fruition thought processes, the names are different. So however, in the cognitive process of the attainment of fruition, that means in Pali, palasamapatti, to those who contemplate in the foregoing manner, the fruits that arise respectively in each case are termed the void emancipation, etc., only in accordance with the way of insight. So in order to get into the attainment of fruition, enlightened person has to practice vipassana. So there is always vipassana. So after getting enlightenment, after going through the first thought process, that is something like on the screen, and later if he wants to get state again, if he wants to be in that state again, the state of fruition, first he must practice vipassana meditation. But when he practices vipassana meditation, his aim is not to reach the higher stage of enlightenment, but to reach the stage he has already reached. To get into the state again, he has already reached. Since his direction is not for the higher stage of enlightenment, the outcome of his vipassana comes to the arising of the fruition moments which he has already gained. So that is called phalasamapatti. Actually, it is like a vacation taken by noble persons. So the noble persons who has seen the three characteristics of all phenomena cannot take delight in life, cannot take delight in the samsara. But still they have this body and mind, and so they are subject to suffering connected with body and mind. But they wanted to get away from the sufferings of body and mind even for a short period of time. So they try to get into the phalasamapatti. So when they are in the phalasamapatti, that means a thought process like the one on the screen, but not with magga, only with phala moments. And there can be millions of phala moments, because when he prepares to enter into this phalasamapatti, he makes a resolution. Say, may I be in that stage for 1 hour, or may I be in that stage for 2-3 hours, and so on. So according to his wish, he will be in that stage for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 1 day, 2 days maybe. During that time, his mind is on Nibbana. Nibbana is the most peaceful state, and so the consciousness that takes Nibbana as object is also peaceful. So he experiences the highest form of peace when he enters into attainment of fruition. So that is why the noble persons try to get into phalasamapatti or attainment of fruition as often as they can. So in that attainment of fruition, the name of the fruition is determined by the vipassana he practices immediately before. So the name of his fruition here is not dependent upon the name of the path he realized maybe some time ago or some days or weeks ago. But it depends on the vipassana he practiced to get into this attainment of fruition. So his original fruition may be, say, white emancipation. But if his vipassana is mainly on the other type of contemplation, like signless contemplation, then the name of his fruition will not be white emancipation, but signless emancipation, and so on. So the name of the fruition moments is different in the initial attainment of enlightenment and later attainment of fruition. Enlightenment thought process arises in a person, that means he has gained enlightenment. And there are 4 stages of enlightenment. So there are 4 kinds of enlightened persons. Now, having developed the path of stream entry, that means having reached the Sotapatti Magga Citta, by abandoning wrong views and doubt, one becomes a Sotapanna. So at the moment of Magga, 2 mental defilements are abandoned. One is ditthi, or wrong view, and the other doubt or vichikicca. So these two mental defilements are eradicated at the moment of path, the first path. So at that moment of first path, he is called a person at the path consciousness, and after that he is called a person at the phala moment, or he is called a person who has entered into the stream. So here stream really means the eight factors. So once a person falls into these eight factors, then one will go closer and closer to Nibbana. Just like if one falls into the current of the river, then one will be taken closer and closer to the ocean. So he is sure to reach Nibbana once he gets into the stream. And he is the one who has escaped from rebirth in woeful states. So he will not be reborn in hell, he will not be reborn as an animal and so on. And will be reborn at most seven more times in the samsara. That means if he does not reach the higher stages of enlightenment. Suppose a person reaches the first stage of enlightenment here, in this life, and then he does not reach any more higher stages. In that case, he will be reborn in human beings, or he will be reborn as celestial beings, and so he may be reborn in these two realms for seven times. And at the seventh rebirth, he will surely reach the higher stages of enlightenment and gain what is called parinibbana, the final cessation of suffering. So this is what isodapanna is. Isodapanna eradicates wrong view and doubt, two mental defilements, and he has escaped from rebirth in woeful states. So he will not be reborn in the woeful state, and he will be reborn at most seven more times. But in the commentaries, it is also said that he eradicates envy and avarice, jealousy, and avarice is difficult to explain. It is intolerance of one's property being common to another. So that is what is called macchariya in Pali, and macchariya is translated as avarice. Now, I have this thing. I don't want it to be used by any other person. If any other person makes use of it, I don't like it. I'm angry, something like that. So that is avarice. Mostly people understand avarice as stinginess. But stinginess is not avarice. Stinginess is attachment. But here it is dependent on attachment, but it is intolerance of one's property being common to another. So I want to use it for myself only, and if anybody comes and makes use of it, I'm angry. So that is avarice. So that kind of thing also the Sotapatti Magga eradicates. That is what the commentaries say. And also in the Abhidhamma text called Pugala Panyati, three kinds of sotapannas are mentioned. Now you'll find them on page 359. One who will be reborn seven times at most in the human and celestial worlds. And two, one who takes birth in good families two or three times before attaining arahantship. Two or three times actually means 2 to 6 times. And one who will be reborn only once more before attaining the goal. So there are three kinds of sotapannas. They differ depending on how strong their vipassana is. And also a sotapanna is marked by scrupulous observance of the five precepts. Now that is also important. thing to note. If a person is a sotapanna, he will observe the five precepts perfectly. He will never break any of the five precepts. That is, abstinence from taking life, stealing, sexual misconduct, false speech, and use of intoxicants. Now, a sotapanna is said to have escaped from rebirth in the woeful states. We say that the doors of the woeful states are closed for him. But that is because a sotapanna does not do anything, any unwholesome act that would lead him to rebirth in woeful states. Now, that also, please note carefully. A sotapanna is not reborn in woeful states because he does not do any misdeed that will lead him to rebirth there. If he does any unwholesome act that would lead him to woeful states, then he will be reborn there. Because sometimes people want to deceive other people. And they will say, I am a sotapanna. So I can do drinking, I can do stealing, something like that. And I am immune to these. But that is not the case. You are never immune to this if you do these acts. Because it is a natural law that unwholesome karma will give you unpleasant results. So please note that a sotapanna is not reborn in woeful states because he does not do anything that will land him in those woeful states. So a sotapanna still has other mental defilements. He still has attachment, lobha. He still has dosa. He still has moha. He still has pride, and so on. But his mental defilements are not strong enough to lead him to rebirth in woeful states. So his mental defilements are not potent, say, to cause him to be reborn in the woeful states. After reaching the first stage, a person will try meditation again to reach the second stage. Suppose a person reaches the second stage. So when he reaches the second stage, the thought process is more or less the same. The only difference is, instead of gotrabhu, now there is what is called vodana, or purity. Because there is no change of lineage when a person becomes a sakadagami, or once returner. Because when he has become a sotapanna, he is already a noble person. So when he reaches the second stage, he becomes a once returner, he is still a noble person. So there is no change of lineage here. So instead of change of lineage, that moment is called in Pali, vodana, purification or purity. So that is the only difference. The others are the same. So when one has become a sakadagami or once returner, with the attenuation of lust, hatred, and delusion, he becomes a once returner. That means a once returner does not eradicate any more mental defilements. But he makes the remaining mental defilements weaker. So again, a once returner has lobha, he has dosa, he has moha, and so on. But his lobha, dosa, and moha are very, very weak, very subtle, and also these arise in him very infrequently. Because with the attainment of the Sakadagami Magga, he has weakened the mental defilements. He has made the mental defilements weaker. And there are said to be five kinds of once returner. So you may take them on page 361. One attains the fruit of one returning in the human world, takes rebirth in the human world, and attains final nirvana here, and so on. among these five, only the fifth answers the meaning of once returner. Once returner means he come back to this life once. That means after dying from this life, he will be reborn, say, as a human being or as a deva, and then again he will come back here. So actually, a once returner has two more lives. Not one life, although he's called once returner. That means he come back here once. In order to come back here once, he must go from here to there. So that is one life. And then he comes back to here, that's another life. So there are two more lives for a once returner. So only the fifth one is the exact once returner, and the others are called once returner because they are similar to the fifth. The description, in this description of once returner, there is the word this world. Who returns to this world? There is difference of opinion among teachers what this world means. Some take it to mean this human world, but there are others who take it to mean human world and also the world of celestial beings. So according to them, it is the Kamavachara world and not just human world. And then there is a third stage of enlightenment, and when a person reaches a third stage of enlightenment, he is called a non-returner. He will not come back here again. So having developed the path of non-returning by totally abandoning sensual lust and ill will, that means eradicating sensual lust and ill will. Sensual lust means lust for sense objects, lust for objects in the human world and in the celestial world. But there remains lust for Brahma world. So an anagami eradicates sensual lust. That means destroy sensual lust altogether, so that anagami has no desire for pleasures in human life or in the life of devas. And ill will or dosa. So anagami is abandoned sensual lust and ill will. And he is the one who does not return to this sensuous state. So an anagami will be reborn in the Brahma world only, and not in the sensuous state, or not in the human world and in the world of devas. So a non-returner has fully eradicated sensual lust and ill will, but he still has lust or attachment for Rupa Vajra and Arupa Vajra realms, or material realm and the immaterial realm. And it is said that only non-returners are reborn in the pure abodes, but there is no fixed determination that all non-returners are reborn there. Normally we say an anagami will be reborn in the pure abodes, but actually they can be reborn in the other realms also, not in pure abodes only. But in pure abodes, there are only anagamis, and no sotabanas, no sakadagamis.
There also are.
What did you say?
In the pure abodes, there will also be arahants.
Wait. We are here talking by way of patisandhi, by way of taking rebirth. So by way of taking rebirth, an arahant has no more rebirth. So arahant is not reborn there, but after being reborn there as an anagami, that anagami will become arahant in the pure abodes. So by way of patisandhi, or by way of rebirth, only anagamis go to pure abodes. So after reaching the pure abode, they reach the arahantship. Right. And also there are five types of anagamis given in Abhidhamma called Pogala Panyati. So they are the five mentioned here. Now we'll go to the arahant. When a person reaches the fourth stage, then he becomes an arahant, the worthy one. A person who is worthy to accept gifts from, say, other people. The gifts given to an arahant brings abundant results. And here, with the total abandonment of defilements, that means all the remaining defilements are eradicated at the moment one reaches arahantship. So all the remaining mental defilements, and they are very subtle and weak ones, so they are all eradicated on reaching the arahantship. And arahant is called a destroyer of the taints, because all taints, all asavas are gone. When he was an anagami, there was still avijja. Avijja taint, I mean ignorance taints. But when he becomes an arahant, he eradicates that taint also, and so there is no more taints for him, and so he is called a destroyer of the taints. Actually, here I think taint represents all mental defilements. So he is a destroyer of all mental defilements and a supreme recipient of offerings. That means he is the one who is most deserving to receive offerings, because offerings made to him bring abundant results. And arahant is said to eradicate five of the sanyojanas or robes. Now you know there are 10 sanyojanas, so there are 5 that ties one down to lower realms, and the others that tie down one to higher realms. So those that tie down to lower realms are eradicated during the lower stages of enlightenment, and the 5 ones that tie down beings to higher existences are eradicated on reaching arahantship. So when one becomes an arahant, there is no mental defilements whatsoever. So an arahant is not capable of being attached to anything. He is not capable of getting angry, not capable of pride, envy, avarice, and so on. So his mind is totally pure. So once I told a man that Buddha, as an arahant, was, say, incapable of getting angry. However, beautiful object he sees, he will not be attached to it, and so on. And however great the provocation is, he will not get angry. Then he said, then Buddha was abnormal. Sometimes you get the most unexpected remarks from these people. Now, it's true that Buddha was, but I don't want to say yes. So I thought about it, and I said, okay, he is supernormal and not abnormal. He's above normal, right? So arahant and Buddhas are like that. They will never get angry, they will never be attached to anything at all. Their minds are totally pure. So we should aim at that total purification of mind. Sometimes I say, don't say that I practice meditation because I want to attain Nibbana, because you don't know what Nibbana is, and you think that you can attain Nibbana only in the next life. What is more practical is the total purification of mind. So we can relate it to ourselves, that we can think of our mind as totally pure, and how good it will be if our minds are totally pure. We are not attached to anything, we are not influenced by anything, And so we can stay calm and firm in the face of all ups and downs of life. So that is the ideal stage we should aspire for. And that can be achieved in this very life if we have the paramis or necessary qualifications.